The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
The Nicole Sandler Show. Questioning authority daily. And that could be the very reason why YouTube is upset. Hey, YouTube. The music bed you hear beneath my voice is from a broadcast sound library that I paid for and have the receipts. So I've got your copyright violation right here. And now, here's Nicole.
All right, welcome to the show. I know we're on. I just need to get the streaming going on the audio streams because I think we weren't working. Hopefully now the audio streams will be working. I don't know for sure. Let's see. I think so. I think we're on. Hopefully. Give it a second. It should come on. Welcome to the show. It's a Thursday. I'm Nicole Sandler. This has been sort of the week from hell. I know it gets old. I'm so sorry to keep harping on the technical problems, but I am a one-woman show here. I don't have an engineer that I could call to come over and fix things for me. So it's trial and error, and I get one thing working and then something else kind of screws up. But hopefully everything is working now. I'm keeping my fingers crossed. and that's about all I can do. You know what? And that's not the right thing either. Anyway, hopefully this'll work. If not, we still do have audio on YouTube and I believe Facebook Live. Are we on Facebook? We'll find out in a second. I'm going to look. Facebook, hello, are you there? I don't know. This is all above my pay grade, I think. Anyway, here we are. It is a Thursday. We are in week, 9, 10 of the quarantine, and things are getting crazier than ever. Donald Trump I don't even know how to put it nicely. There's something seriously wrong with him, and I know that's the understatement of the year. I'm looking. Tell me, you guys, if the audio stream's working. Is it? No, I give up on TuneIn. Only thing working is YouTube. I'm so sorry, you guys. I don't know what to say. Damn it. No, I don't want to play the URL, right? I don't want to do that. We want to, we're doing the sound card. I don't know. Hopefully it's working. I think I just need to tear everything apart and put it back together again. But that's how I got in this place in the first place. Anyway, I also wanted to play for you this Led Zeppelin song parody. And again, I had it working earlier, and just in the last few minutes, the remote input died. So we'll have to go to Plan B. And I think Plan B today is our friend Lauren Mayer, and hopefully this will work. Keeping my fingers crossed. It's a song that you're familiar with. Hold on, let me just make sure it's going to play. It should play. All right, well, take it away, Lauren Mayer.
He was heading down to the Chick-fil-A. Sign on the door said close today. Due to the pandemic, we gotta shut down. Well, he thought, I gotta get something to eat. And Bolarama's right down the street. But they were closed too, just like everything else in town. So he called his buddy, the governor, and said, can't we get back to the way things were? And Brian Kemp said, son, now don't you fear. We'll defy those scientists by and by. So what if a few folks have to die? It's the price of the freedom which we hold so dear. That's the fight for the right to bowl in Georgia. That's the fight that's making rednecks see red. They don't trust the folks saying stay at home, we implore ya. Heck, the governor himself just learned how virus gets spread. One gal's roots got her so depressed, she organized a real big protest to Rosa Parks of the frosted big hair crowd. They don't need no masks, so don't you all knack. The brave ones carry a Confederate flag, a symbol of the phony heritage of which they're so proud. That's the fight for the right to a blowout in Georgia. If your stylist won't come in, then you'll make do with a temp. It's your right to have someone else do your manicure for ya. So your hands will look pretty when you clap for Governor Kim, who said these restrictions we gotta ease, cause the cure can't be worse than the disease. The economy's worth a little human sacrifice. But the experts' advice Kemp doesn't heed. Even Trump said he disagreed. And of course he changes his mind every minute, sometimes even twice. That's the fight for the right to a tattoo in Georgia. Treating scientific guidelines with contempt. Of course, the voters aren't all nuts, nor is every business employer. And at this rate, the state's gotta get unkempt.
Unkempt, get it? Yeah.
For the right to go to Waffle House in Georgia. Going back to the gym and the beaches like we've all dreamt. Of course, if everyone gets sick, then there'll be no economy for ya. So at this rate, let's hope the state gets unkempt.
Unkempt, yes! Let's get unkempt. Lauren Mayer. Yes, Lauren Mayer, everyone, from Lauren Mayer's Comedy. Find her on Twitter, on Facebook, on YouTube, and all those places. Lauren Mayer does one or two great song parodies a week, and she was actually doing them before the world jumped on the COVID song parody bandwagon. Hopefully tomorrow I'll get everything working right to play you the Led Zeppelin cover, because it is fun. All right, so... there's a lot going on. It is Thursday. Howie Klein's going to be here. And for the third week in a row, I promise you, we are going to try to get through the list of progressive candidates. Well, in this case, that have been endorsed by the Blue America PAC. That's Howie Klein's, Digby's, and John Amato's group. They find try to convince to run great progressives who would make a wonderful candidates, and then they raise money for them. We talked about it last week with Howie. It's not your typical pack. Howie and Digby and John Amato don't make any money off of this. It's all about raising money that goes directly to the candidates, which is kind of unusual in today's political climate, where it's every, you know, shyster out to line their own pocketbooks. And that's one of the big problems with, you know, the DCCC and the way they work, is that all the organizations that they, basically say are okay to work with, they all get a cut. And it's all about who can make money off of an ad buy or a production order, or it's mostly having to do with advertising. Well, the Blue America PAC is different. They don't take a cut. The money goes to the candidates in just a very small, amount that goes to help run the Blue America PAC. But none of them take a salary or anything. All right. But today we are going to go through the list. I redid the calendar to find out when all the primaries were rescheduled for. Went through it with Howie. He gave me a list of some of the groups that or the candidates that they've endorsed. And we'll go through it today, because, again, while our eyes are off the prize, we got to get him back on. And the prize is November 3rd. It's Election Day. And it's not only the presidential election that's at stake here. It's Congress. And the Democrats need to hold on to the House. And they need to take back the Senate. And to do that, we need to make sure we participate in the primaries. And again, that's a problem right now, because Donald Trump is railing against mail-in ballots. Oy. So let's get to the news, shall we? And we'll get Howie in a little bit. And yeah, what the hell? We'll try to do it live. Uh-oh. Okay. That's weird. Now, my audio just completely went out. Seriously? I don't know what happened here. I'm going to have to try to play this from a different source. Let's see. I have it backed up. Oh, would it help if I turned? Which monitor is that? Okay, this one.
I read the news today. Oh, boy.
Okay, we can do that. We can even have Bill stick his head in here.
Do it live.
Okay, Bill.
I'll write it and we'll do it live.
Okay. Well,
fucking thing sucks.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. I wonder if I pushed the wrong button, maybe. No? I'm just trying to figure out why that pot went dead. All right. So let me tell you what's going on in the news. Every Thursday morning, the Labor Department reports the previous week's jobless claims. Last week, another 2.4 million workers filed new claims for a total of 38.6 million workers who've now applied for unemployment assistance over the past 9 weeks. And just for comparison's sake, the largest weekly number of unemployment claims before the pandemic hit filed in 1 week was 695,000. That was in October of 1982. In 9 weeks, we've had 38.6 million people file for unemployment, just saying. Now, that total also doesn't include hundreds of thousands of self-employed and gig economy workers receiving unemployment benefits for the first time through a temporary coronavirus-related program. And it also doesn't include probably hundreds of thousands more of us, and I'll put myself in that category, along with my daughter, who in Florida can't even get through to file an unemployment claim. The website doesn't work. And why do you think we call it Florida? The website doesn't work, and nothing works. This website, the Florida Unemployment Portal, as it were, was allegedly rebuilt by the new governor, DeSantis, when he came into office, and they spent something like a ridiculous amount of money I'm doing 25 things at once here, and this is not working well. Anyway, they spent a ridiculous amount of money to have this website rebuilt, and it still doesn't work. And, I remember how the whole country freaked out with the Affordable Care Act, the Obamacare website, when it first went live, and how fucked up that was. The Republicans have fucked up everything they've attempted. And Florida is ground zero for the fucked up-ness. Yeah, I like to coin my own new terms. Anyway, the omission of self-employed workers means the actual number of workers seeking claims has been higher since the federal program called Pandemic Unemployment Assistance, included in a stimulus package approved in March, got underway. So that 38.6 million workers who are now, the official unemployment rolls, doesn't include the self-employed and gig economy workers who allegedly are eligible for unemployment, but it's just not happening right now, at least here in Florida. I don't understand. In other devastating numbers, the World Health Organization yesterday reported 106,000 new coronavirus cases in the previous 24 hours, making it the most in a single day since the outbreak began. So the most new recorded cases in a single day happened yesterday, and the whole world is starting to open up again. I just don't understand it. Well, it looks like, just so you know what's going on, we are having massive storms here in South Florida, and it looks like my internet is out again. So it looks like our streaming went down. YouTube, bear with me. Hopefully it'll come back. I have no control over this stuff. Our internet has been foobar now for 2 days, and that's probably what's presenting a lot of these problems. So it looks like YouTube is coming back. All right. I'm just hoping our power stays on. So keep your fingers crossed, because, you know, spit and chewing gum here. Okay, so streaming is back. Weather, hold on. There are 60 mile an hour winds forecast and giant hail. And, you know, we've got a screened back porch, back patio where the pool is. And I was in the kitchen just looking out the window as the rain was blowing sideways, and two of the screen panels blew out. So, you know, I don't know if this is a good time to bring this up or not, but it's a discussion that David and I had last night, and we both feel this way, and you might feel this way too. It seems like the world is coming to an end, doesn't it? You know, remember when Obama was in office and the Republicans were freaking out and saying that Obama is the Antichrist? Now, I don't know religion. I don't know Bible stories. I don't know the urban legends that might give rise to an Antichrist. I don't know if that's an official religious tome or whatever. But I have heard of the theory of an Antichrist who would come back, who would be a charismatic figure, larger than life, with an uncanny following, right? And people were saying that it was Obama. But when you think about it, it makes more sense. It's Donald Trump. He has every single quality that the Antichrist would possess, and he's actively trying to bring about the end of the world. All right, let me get back to the news. We can pick up that notion, but it feels that way with the climate doing what it's doing, with the planet being sick, with this pandemic, with everything else going on. You know, I'm at the point where it's like, just let it happen already. I mean, if this is what our future is, being stuck at home or having to, every time we go out, having to wear a mask, being afraid of infecting people or getting infected because you're around people, that's no existence. It's just kind of, it's kind of frightening. Anyway, let me get back to the news because, you know, I just told you about the numbers. The World Health Organization yesterday saying 106,000 new coronavirus cases diagnosed worldwide yesterday alone, which would signal to me it's not a great time to ease up on the stay-at-home restrictions, right? And then this morning, we passed the milestone, the tragic milestone, of 5 million global COVID-19 cases. This according to Johns Hopkins University. And the worldwide death toll reached 328,368 people. Again, those numbers are astounding. 328,000 people dead. And in this country alone, as of this morning, we're closing in on 93,500 deaths. 93,439 people in the United States alone dead. And Donald Trump is so cavalier about all this. As you heard yesterday, he was saying, oh, well, it's a bad badge of honor. Because, and he gave us some bullshit about testing. Well, let me go a little further here, because there's a new, at Columbia University, they have disease modelers. You know, there are a number of models that are out there giving us estimates of perhaps what we can expect by the way of, you know, infections and deaths. And can you imagine having that job, having to, you know, write up and figure out actuarial tables of how many people are going to die? Craziness. But there are new estimates out from Columbia University's disease modelers. And well, it shows that the U.S. really blew it. We knew that already, but now we know it even more. Because the researchers estimate that if the United States had begun imposing social distancing measures 1 week earlier in March, possibly 36,000 fewer people would have died of COVID-19 so far. 36,000 people if we had just started the stay-at-home social distancing measures a week earlier. And then shockingly, they also say that, quote, and if the country had begun locking down cities and limiting social contact on March 1st, 2 weeks earlier than when most people started staying home, a vast majority of the nation's deaths, they say about 83%, would have been avoided. Incredible. Meanwhile, oh, I don't know if this is going to work, and I don't think I brought all this audio over to the other player, but I'll get it in a minute if this one doesn't work. So Trump today, I guess, as he was leaving to go to Wisconsin, to Michigan to tour the Ford factory that has been reconfigured to make ventilators, where he was told in no uncertain terms, everyone entering must wear a mask. He hasn't decided whether or not he's going to wear a mask because he's an asshole. And shoot, they didn't transfer over there. Damn it. Anyway, let's see if this works. I have a feeling it won't. Let's try it. Oh, here we go. So Trump is asked, you'll hear the reporter saying, well, this new study from Columbia says if we had begun imposing social distancing measures 1 week earlier in March, about 36,000 fewer people would have died. And here's how the asshole responded.
Report in the New York Times today that 36,000 people would have been saved if you guys did social distancing measures just 1 week earlier. Do you believe that? What's your reaction to that?
I was so early. I was earlier than anybody thought. God. I put a ban on people coming in from China. Everybody fought me on that. They didn't want it. Nancy Pelosi, a month later, was dancing in the streets
lie.
Of San Francisco.
No, she wasn't.
Chinatown.
That's
so that
a lie.
People wouldn't believe what's
That's
happening.
That's a lie.
I don't even blame that. But I was way early.
Oh, fuck you. He was not way early. And his travel ban that he keeps saying, I did this and nobody else wanted it, was not even a travel ban. Yeah, it banned Chinese nationals from coming in the country, but it didn't ban any Americans who had been over there from coming back. There were no restrictions. His ban on travel from China was not really a ban. And it wasn't effective, as you can tell, because the United States by far has so many more cases, more deaths, more infections, more of the outbreak, because it's so out of control here. And so the idiot was asked about that too, right? He was asked yesterday, would he do anything differently? And he said, no, I wouldn't do it here. I wouldn't do anything differently.
4% of the world's population and 30% of the outbreak. What would you have done differently?
What would you have done differently?
Well, nothing. If you take New York and New Jersey, which were very hard hit,
Shut up. All you needed to hear was nothing. The idiot would do nothing differently? I'm going to put up, if you're watching on YouTube, a graphic here. This is a chart. And it's about the COVID global counts. I'm sort of obsessed with these numbers today. And this chart, I'll post it on the blog at NicoleSandler.com along with today's show so that those of you who aren't watching the video will be able to see what I'm talking about. But this chart, I just pulled out the first 20 countries in terms of total cases. Not only do they break out the total number of cases, they also break out new cases, total deaths, new deaths, total recovered, active cases, serious/critical cases, total cases per 1 million people of population, right? Deaths per 1 million people, total tests, and tests per 1 million people. So they really break it down so you can really find the per capita numbers. And look, I know he loves the poorly educated. I get it because, they're the people who are on his wavelength. Oh, I thought I had I love the poorly educated up here. I guess I don't. Here it is.
I love the poorly educated.
Yeah, we know, Donald, because that's your speed. But this was wonderful today. He was asked about, you know, he keeps insisting that we did more tests than anybody else. We were doing more testing. No one approaches. And you remember the idiocy that he said last week, right?
We've been doing testing at a level that nobody's ever done it before. We have the best testing in
the
world.
No, yeah, we don't.
It could be the testing's, frankly, overrated.
No, it isn't.
Maybe it is overrated.
No, it isn't.
But whatever they start yelling, we want more, we want more. You know, they always say we want more, we want more, because they don't want to give you credit.
I want to get to the point where he says, all right, we're having real serious, I think I've got a short in my system because it's cutting out in the middle of a cut. But anyway, this is the guy who said, if we didn't do so many tests, we wouldn't have so many cases. What a fucking idiot. You'd still have the cases, you moron. We just wouldn't know how many people were infected walking around infecting everyone else. So he was asked today about per capita. Because, look, I'm looking at this chart. It says the United States has done 13,206,975 tests. And if I go down the list of the top 20 countries, you're right. We've done more than anyone else. In second place is Russia with 7,840,880 tests. But then when you look to the next line in the chart, it says tests per 1 million people in the population. The United States has done 39,926 per 1 million people. Russia has done almost double that, 53,731 per 1 million people in their population. The population of the United States is almost 331 million. Population of Russia, I didn't realize this, but is 147 million. And then when we go down the line, let's get to Spain. Spain, with a population of only 46,752, has completed 3,037,840 tests, but that's 64,977 tests per 1 million people in their population. That's what per capita means. When you break it down along these percentage lines and you find out really per person, they're testing based on the population if all populations were equal. And what did Donald Trump say about per capita testing?
And, you know, when you say per capita, there's many per capitas. It's like per capita relative to what?
I'm sorry. Oh, we just have to hear that again.
And, you know, when you say per capita, there's many per capitas. It's like per capita relative to what?
Yeah. And now we understand why.
I love the poorly educated.
Because you're a fucking moron. Oh, my God. Yeah. So I will post this chart because it's very fascinating. Per capita, we do not lead the world in testing. We still lead the world in the number of deaths and the number of cases. Look, in terms of total cases, the United States, this chart has us at 1,604,109 total COVID cases in the United States. Number two is Russia with 317,000. 3, 6, 9, 12, 15, more than five times as many cases we have. Total deaths? Well, the U.S. is clocking in at 95,571, according to this chart that I pulled about an hour ago. No one else is even close. Looking down again, this list of the top 20 countries in terms of numbers of infections, number two would be Spain. No, I'm sorry, I'm wrong. The UK. The UK with 36,042 cases. Deaths. That's compared to our 95,571. It's not even close. And this moron is saying, I wouldn't do anything differently. And then he went on to actually say, it's a badge of honor that we have so many more cases confirmed by tests. He says it's a badge of honor because it's saying we did more tests than everyone else. No, we didn't. And it's time the American people stop believing this con man and this grifter. He is nothing more than a con man who's trying to turn this country into his own personal piggy bank, vendetta factory, cheering section. Again, I find myself speechless over the what's the word I'm looking for? The chutzpah of this administration, the way they lie about everything. For instance, you know, you love this one. You know, Trump has been escalating his Obamagate attacks. And while he's doing it, the Republican-led Senate is playing along with this nonsense. And so yesterday, the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee voted 8-6, strict party line vote, to subpoena the lobbying firm called Blue Star Strategies. Blue Star Strategies was a consultant to Burisma. Yes, the Ukrainian gas company that paid Hunter Biden, Joe's son, to serve on its board because they are ramping up these attacks on Obama. It's like, what the hell? It just makes no sense. And then today, the Senate confirmed John Ratcliffe as their new director of national intelligence. The vote was 49-44, so again, along party lines. Now, remember, Ratcliffe, who had been a congressman from Texas, was nominated last year by Trump, and there was a bipartisan pushback on him. Republicans told Trump, this guy is not qualified for this job. And Trump somehow convinced them all to vote him in when he renominated him. It's incredible. And the gaslighting, the level of gaslighting is astounding. You know, in their cryptic cries of Obamagate, they're throwing all kinds of shit against the wall to see what sticks. Well, today, NBC News confirmed that Michael Flynn's name was never masked in that FBI report on his phone call with Russian Ambassador Kislyak. The Republicans have keep questioning why Flynn's name was, quote, unmasked. It turns out it was never masked in the first place. This is Opposite World.
Everything you thought you knew, you never knew it all. Sideways is straight ahead. Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, Opposite World.
I don't get it. I just don't get any of it at all. So this is why I think he is the Antichrist and the world is coming to an end. And I say, if it's going to happen, come on, blow it up in style. And let's all go out rather than having to, you know, quarantine at home for a couple of years. If you're going to end the world, really, can you just do it already? I know. It just shows you where my head's at these days, right? All right. I know what we should do. It is that time of the day again, or that time of the week again. So with no further ado, let's get Howie Klein on the line, shall we?
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acidic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Oh, yeah.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
All right, keeping my fingers crossed because Howie, the gremlins have been out all over me this week. Hopefully we can hear each other. You there?
I hear you fine, and I heard Chuck before you.
Yay! All right. I love it when things work, especially this week, because things haven't been working this week. So I want to jump right into our discussion about the elections coming up in November, because we've tried to do this for the last couple of weeks, and we keep going off on side trips, basically, and we haven't gotten through much many of these candidates that we want to talk about, because so much is at stake on November 3rd, and it's not just the presidential race. The Democrats need to hold on to the House, and they need to take back the Senate if we have any chance of saving the world. I think, you know, and our chances of saving the world are better with a progressive Congress than, you know, with what we're looking at in the competition for president.
Right. I completely agree. I just want to change the object a little tiny bit.
Okay.
So you keep talking about November, but there are still primaries left, as you know.
Yes.
And that's very important.
You're right.
Because in order to make the Congress more progressive, in November, we have to make sure that there are progressives running.
Exactly.
And that, so we should talk about that a little bit.
Yes, well, that's, and that's definitely, right, but that, that's.
Too. Yes, and I feel way, way optimistic about this whole thing.
Do you?
I feel that there's going to be a gigantic anti-Trump reaction to his inability to handle the pandemic, and that's going to sweep in all these candidates. That's why it's so important that we make sure to that good candidates are nominated, because if they're not, then bad Democrats are going to get swept into office. That's what's being set up now. You know, Biden is terrible. You know how badly I feel about it, about him. I'm not going to go into that. I'm not going to start talking about how horrible he is and all of his negative attributes. Instead, what I want to say is that Trump is going to lose, and because whoever is the nominee is going to win. It doesn't mean that the nominee, whether it's for Senate or House or president, is good. It just means Trump and his Republican enablers are so bad, and people are so angry, and they just want a change, and they want to get rid of them. And a change is going to be easy. A change, and you know, when Biden talks about back to normalcy,
yeah,
you know, normalcy is what gave us Trump, but they don't care. They just don't want Trump. So, you know, it's really, really important that we nominate good candidates now, because they're going to win in November.
Yeah.
And you know, I was really disappointed on this past Tuesday when Oregon voted. And, you know, all of the progressives who were running, some of them were, they were all long shots, but some of them were really long shots. They all lost.
And
the only one that even had a semi respectable showing was Mark Gamba, mayor of Milwaukee, who got, and he only got 23% against a just dreadful, horrible blue dog. I mean, Kurt Schrader, the blue dog who represents that district, is as bad as you can get. But, you know, Bernie did so badly there as well, only 18%. So, I mean, at least Gamba did a little bit better than him. But, you know, another person only got 6%.
Wow.
I mean, it's just shocking to me and depressing to me how progressive candidates did so poorly in Oregon, which should be a state that's open to it. But so many people are just thinking, you know, there's Democrats and Republicans, and then they're not thinking about the difference between a progressive and even a reactionary like Schrader. Just horrifying to me. But there are some races that are coming up with good candidates who are trying their best to make people understand that differentiation. Now, I think you have, do you have the calendar?
I do have the calendar.
I can dig it up, but
yep,
I don't have it.
I've got it right in front of me. So the next primary, and yes, this is all about the primaries, and I stated it wrong at the top. These are where I've got the revised primary calendar, because so many races were postponed due to the virus. So I've got the new dates, mostly in how they're being held. For instance, the next race is actually tomorrow. It's in Hawaii, and it's being done 100% by mail. Blue America doesn't have any candidates running in Hawaii, right?
No, because the guy who we like.
Uh-oh. Howie?
I didn't even.
Yeah, there you are.
Because I'd rather whatever money comes in go to the candidates who really need it, mm-hmm. rather than Kahale, who's, you know, who's really good, but he's going to win anyway, doesn't need help from us. God bless.
Gotcha. All right, the next one after that is June 2nd. Delaware, D.C., Indiana, Maryland, Montana, New Mexico, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, and South Dakota are all voting on June 2nd. Those are new dates for most of those states. We talked a couple of weeks ago, Howie, about Jim Harper in Indiana, and he's somebody good, right? Where we left...
And not only is he somebody good, it's really, really important because people just roll their eyes and they say, oh, Indiana, it's such a red state, it doesn't matter who wins the primary. This is the opposite of that. This is a district that is very, very close to Chicago. And as I always say, it has more in common with Chicago than it does with Indianapolis. And this district, whoever wins the primary next week is going to be the winner of the general. They will be going to Congress. This is not a district where Republicans compete seriously. In fact, one of the Democrats who's running is actually a Republican, and he's favored right now, and certainly all the establishment forces are trying to push him. But he's a Republican who's pretending to be a Democrat. Why? Because the district is so blue that you can't win in that district as a Republican. So he's just saying, okay, I'm a Democrat. But everything he believes in and everything he's for are all Republican values. So that's why it's so important that Jim Harper become the nominee. He's a real progressive. He's a very, very, very skillful attorney. And he's the guy that we hope is going to win this race. There's another person in a more difficult but open seat in the suburbs north of Indianapolis. And she's a fantastic candidate too. She has a more difficult race to win in this case, but a really, really, really good candidate. Her name, by the way, I should have mentioned that right at the top, is Jennifer Christie.
Okay.
So Jennifer is a scientist, mother of three, a very, very, very smart woman who is running in an empty seat that's kind of red. But, you know, it's the kind of district where people are so angry right now at Trump and so angry at the Republicans in Congress because of how horribly this this pandemic fight is going. I mean, people don't understand. It's not like this all over the world. In other places, they're doing a much more successful job. I mean, I don't know if you saw, you probably did, I think everyone saw the New York Times story that said at the minimum, 36,000 lives would have been saved if Trump just did the barest
a week earlier.
Things that needed
a week
to be
earlier.
Done. That shouldn't just be mostly his fault.
Yeah.
But there were other, there were also governors who were, you know, didn't know what to do. I mean, in a case like this, you have to just rush in there and do everything, even if it means overspending. You just have to do it. And if you wait just a week, that could be 10,000 more people dying.
Right. That's right.
And you know, Cuomo is being lauded as some kind of a hero now. And when de Blasio wanted to close down, Cuomo said no. When the counties in the Bay Area wanted to close down, Newsom said no. Fortunately, the counties in the Bay Area just left in Newsom's face and closed down. And the counties in the Bay Area are the ones who are doing the best in terms of cases, in terms of deaths. And the rest of California is not doing as well. And in fact, now there are big spikes
in
some of the California counties. I know I just took you off on a tangent.
But that's okay.
Let's just keep to the candidates. I know you want to do that. You did. You just said Indiana. Who else?
Indiana. Maryland. It's a new date for Maryland where we have Michaela Wilkes.
Right. That's the most important race where we have a shot. I spoke to her a couple of times in the last week. It sounds like I'm talking with AOC again.
Really?
She's sure of her game plan. She's executing her game plan. It just really felt like I was talking to AOC when everyone was saying she had no chance. And they're saying the same thing about Michaela, because Michaela is running against Steny Hoyer, the number two guy in the House.
Yes.
And a real bad guy. He doesn't represent his district in Maryland. He represents K Street, the lobbyist street of Washington. Michaela is a fantastic candidate. There's another person who's running in Maryland as well for the old Elijah Cummings.
Yeah.
There was a special election for that one. But this is for the next. So the special election, the person who was elected for that, Kwasi Mfume, that just covers until January.
Okay.
After that, for the next 2 years, is going to depend on who wins on January 2nd. And Jill Carter, a state senator, is a proven progressive, a very successful state senator. She would make a great U.S. congresswoman, and she's in that race as well. Very important to remember,
okay.
Jill Carter. So that's it for Maryland in terms of the races that we think there's even a chance of flipping a very blue state. So whoever wins the primary is going to be the winner of of the election in November.
And the thing is, Steny Hoyer, I mean, this is, you mentioned that she reminds you of AOC. Well, the fact that she's primarying Steny Hoyer, this is what AOC did with Joe Crowley, who was next in line to be speaker. And Steny Hoyer, of course, is House Majority Leader or something, I think is his title. Old school leadership who is not moving over to make way for younger, more progressive members. And that's what we would get in Michaela Wilkes and hopefully Maryland.
Right. Worse than not moving over, he's working with Jerry Busso to disadvantage every progressive who comes down the pike. I mean, they're trying to kill every progressive who tries to run. I am going to go into it. Nate McMurray took on a Republican incumbent in the most red district in New York State, R+11. That is the reddest district in New York. The DCCC wrote him off, and they said, this guy is wrong for that district. That is a conservative district, and he is a progressive. We're not going to get behind him. They didn't spend anything on this guy. He came within... It was one of the closest races in the country. It didn't get decided for a week because it was so close. And now he's running again, and he's not running against an incumbent. The incumbent is in jail or appealing his jail sentence or something. And Nate McMurray could win. And again, the DCCC is refusing to help him. Mm. This guy is on the verge of becoming a U.S. congressman, and this is in New York, and in the suburban area between Buffalo and Rochester. And Nate is great. He's awesome. I always use this picture of him and AOC together, palling it up. And here he is in a deep red district, almost won last time, likely to win this time. DCCC really wants him to lose.
Wow.
That's DCCC. That's Cherry Bustos and Steny Hoyer.
Horrible.
And Nancy Pelosi.
Yep. No, it is time for a changing of the guard. And look, everything's on the line right now because everything is so fucked up that we need to fix it, and we need to change the people in power. All right, so we're
part is what Marianne Williamson has been talking about all week, and getting a lot of good attention. And she went right after Nancy Pelosi, who she likes and respects on a personal level, but said, you know, we need a changing of the guard.
We do.
The people who are running against people like Nancy Pelosi and against people like Debbie Wasserman Schultz and against people like Steny Hoyer, what Marianne said is they are what Nancy Pelosi purported to be when she first ran for Congress decades ago. But, you know, she's not that anymore. Steny Hoyer, well, he was never that.
Right.
And neither was Debbie Wasserman
Schultz. Right, no.
But they all have progressive opponents.
Now, speaking of Debbie Wasserman Schultz and her opponent, who's been on this program before, Jen Perelman, because they're right over just one district away from me. Have you ever spoken to her?
I have. I've spoken to her a few times, and this week I spoke to her a lot of times.
Good.
And, you know, I've been coming around towards her a lot. I think there's no comparison between her and Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
She's
a million times better.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I've been talking with her more about how she's going to actually win. You know, as someone who, you know, at Blue America, when we endorse someone, we're asking people to donate to them.
Mm-hmm.
And me to be able to ask someone to donate, I want to make sure it's not like a waste. And they're wasting their time. Plus, I want them to give the money to candidates who can actually win.
Right.
So we sometimes take a chance with people. We do. But we don't want to be nominating. We don't want to be endorsing people, I should say, who are not working hard, who are not putting their all into it. So it's not only about issues. I mean, a lot. It's easy to, like, you know, read Bernie's platform and say, yeah, those are my issues. Mm-hmm. It's easy to do.
Right.
But it's much harder to organize a campaign and do all the work that needs to be done, especially in this grassroots time, and not just say, well, I lost because of the pandemic. No, that is not satisfactory. And when I see candidates getting in the single digits, you know, I can't tell the Blue America members to
right.
give to those candidates. That's ridiculous. But I like I said, I've been talking with Jen a lot. At the request, as a matter of fact, of Marianne Williamson.
Oh, good.
And
okay.
And she is a worthy candidate, and I had heard that from you as well.
Mm-hmm.
And she's definitely someone who I would expect by the next time we speak, she will have been endorsed by Blue America.
Oh, that'd be great. No, I like her. Like I said, I had her on the show once, and it's hard right now because it's not like candidates can get out and do retail campaigning. They're not knocking on doors. It's a whole...
Right, but she is organizing a real campaign. She has mm-hmm. organized a real mm-hmm. campaign, and she's making a worthy effort.
Yes.
So I feel that that's important too.
Great.
I mean, I see candidates who aren't doing that. And
oh,
it infuriates me that they're doing is sitting and tweeting all day and asking people for money and not doing the job that it takes.
I definitely have a short in this board. All right. Howie Klein is with us. He should pop back in any second now. I don't know what's going on here. Howie, I lost you for a second. I don't know if you can hear me. Come on. Hopefully he'll pop back in. In the meantime, while we're waiting for Howie to reappear, damn it. All right. So we were talking about June 2nd. June 2nd, we mentioned Delaware, D.C., Indiana, Maryland. The next one is Montana. And Howie has not come back up yet. Howie, I'm going to call you back on a different line. Because I've got a short in this board. Unbelievable. All right. I couldn't get through one damn show without a technical problem. You know, it just can't happen. I'm beyond frustrated, in case you couldn't tell. All right. I'm going to try to get Howie back on this other line. I'm hoping this will work because I was futzing with... at least we can hear it going out. Hopefully he'll be able to hear us on this.
I never lost you. I heard you loud and clear the whole time.
Really? I just couldn't get you through my board.
I heard everything you said. So,
okay.
Yes, Montana. I just went on and on and on. I was like so eloquent, the best of the day. But anyway, let's forget about that and let's go to Montana.
Okay.
Because there's a really, really important race there that people need to pay attention to. There's a conservative Democrat running, worthless. It'll just be another nothing sitting in a chair, wasting a seat, wasting a vote. Just as bad as they come, and then there's someone really good, and the bad one is not going to win anyway. She's like a Republican light all the way, and even though the D-Trip is trying to push for her, I can't remember her first name. Her last name is Williams,
okay.
And there's a candidate who really can win this race. He's proven he can win this race because he won a state legislative seat in a Republican district that Trump had just won. By, I don't know, I think 11 or 16 points or something. I mean, it was a real Trump district, and he came in there and won. And he didn't come in there and won by saying, well, I'm kind of like a Republican, but I'm not as bad. No, he came in there with a progressive platform and talked his neighbors who had just voted for Trump into voting for him. A real good guy's name is Tom Winter,
mm-hmm.
and he does have a real shot to win this thing, and he's definitely somebody that people should should support. Very important.
Tom Winter in Montana.
He can make the difference. Now, people say, well, does it really matter because Montana is so red and in November the Republicans are going to just win anyway? No, they're not. Trump is doing really badly there. People hate him for what he's doing with the pandemic. He was unpopular anyway. He did win last time. Probably is not going to win this time, even though the Democrats don't understand. And even better than that, on the top of the ticket is the current popular governor, Bullock, who is going to sweep
the Senate,
that state.
Right.
He is going to win a U.S. Senate seat from this guy, Steve Daines. Steve
mm-hmm.
Bullock will be the next senator.
Cool.
And he and Tom Winter are friends. They're going to campaign together.
Wow.
And they are going to help each other to win both the Senate and the House seat. There's only one House seat, so it's at large, just like the uh-huh. senators. They, you know, you vote. It's exactly the same electorate. There's no change at all.
Might be going to Montana soon. Be a dental floss tycoon. Sorry, just thought I'd quote Frank Zappa for a moment. Speaking of Montana,
oh, you frightened me. I didn't get the dental. I didn't get
really?
What
you don't
saying.
Know
I,
that I Montana, the Frank Zappa song, Montana. You'll have to check it out.
It.
Okay. Also on June 2nd, to get through the list, New Mexico, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, South Dakota. Blue America doesn't have anybody in Pennsylvania.
No.
Wow.
Not this time. Just okay. We are urging our members to make sure. To back one incumbent who I don't want to say he's in trouble because the voters love him, but it's kind of a red leaning state, and the Republicans are putting a huge amount of money in against him. It's Matt Cartwright, who beat a blue dog a few years ago in a primary. Hoyer was campaigning against him constantly, and he's been a great senator. A great congressman. He's the whip of the Progressive Caucus, and he's in a real tough district and votes very well. And his name is Matt Cartwright, and that's the person in that state who we're supporting.
In Pennsylvania,
a lot
okay.
of the candidates are very, very, very conservative in Pennsylvania. The DCCC has talked everybody into thinking the only way to win. Because Trump won the state, therefore the only way to win is to mimic Republicans and be a Republican light.
Wow.
So there's no one good, so we're not involved.
Okay. I think we're going to have time for one more as we work our way through the new primary calendar with Howie Klein. June 6th is the Virgin Islands caucuses, and then June 9th is a new primary date for both West Virginia and Georgia. And Blue America has a congressional candidate in Georgia, and Lisa Ring, yes?
We love Lisa. We have a congressional candidate for her. We endorsed her. And we also have one, by the way, in West Virginia
really?
With Kathy Kunkel.
Okay.
So that's a big day for us. I just want to mention about Lisa, just before you called, I was on the phone with, I can't say it because it's not up to me to announce this,
uh-huh.
but this organization consulted with me, and they just made the decision that they're going to endorse her. It's going to
okay.
be a very, very big deal in Georgia. They're going to endorse both Lisa and the Senate candidate, the best of the Senate candidates there, Teresa Tomlinson. So those two women are both going to get big endorsements, I think, next week, maybe the end of this week. And hopefully it'll help their races. You know, one thing that Chuck Schumer has been doing, and the DCCC does it their own way, but what Chuck Schumer does is he goes to the polling firms and he says, look, we're paying for the poll. We want you to do it our way. Or you want to do business with us, do it our way.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do is they have matchups, but they don't put the progressives in the matchups. They've been putting only the conservatives that they back into the matchups. So they'll have a matchup, for example, in Georgia, where they'll say, oh, look, John Ossoff is the one who can beat David Perdue. And then people don't know that there are other candidates. They just see that and they think, yes, let's beat David Perdue. But Civics, a very, very good polling firm who doesn't care about Chuck Schumer and his cheating, lousy Republican ways,
uh-huh.
They just polled and they did a matchup with Teresa Tomlinson and showed her tied with David Perdue.
Hmm.
So, I mean, and this is with the DSCC and Chuck Schumer doing everything they can to ruin her campaign, working against a progressive Democrat because they say she's too progressive, she can't win. Yet, all these conservatives who have run for governor of Georgia have lost one after the other badly. The Democrats never elect anybody. And then last time we had someone who ran, Stacey Abrams, who ran for mm-hmm. governor on a progressive platform, and she actually won. It was stolen from her by the Secretary of State, who's
yep.
now the governor.
Yep.
And yet, you know, Chuck Schumer says that, oh, well, a progressive can't win in Georgia. So he's supporting somebody who's basically a blank slate and nothing, who stands for nothing, who means nothing, and who will do whatever Chuck Schumer tells him to do. I mean, Chuck Schumer's dream is about to come true, I think, which is going to fill the House with one after another version of Kirsten Sinema.
Oh, God.
That's what we're going to wind
oh,
up
God.
With.
Oh, God, please.
Big, big victory for the
oh,
Democrats.
God.
The Democrats are going to win six, seven, eight seats in the Senate. Huge deal. And they're all going to be a bunch of conservative nothings.
All right. Well, we got it.
But
we gotta
hopefully Teresa will be the nominee, because this is a woman who can win. She's proven it. As mayor of Columbus, she was, you know, it's a Republican. It was a Republican city. She won it. She ran it. She was reelected. She was, you know, considered one of the best governors of a small city in America. She make an incredible U.S. senator.
Sounds good to me. All right. I will post this list, the ones that we went over today, on my blog at NicoleSandler.com.
We'll get to New York. Let's do that next week.
We'll get next week. We get to Kentucky and New York and Virginia and beyond that.
Jersey.
Jersey. I don't have Jersey on there. I'll have to look for Jersey.
Get Jersey. We need them.
Jersey. Jersey
is some great primaries coming up.
Jersey is July 7th. That's their new date. So the whole calendar, everything's been postponed. So I have the updated. So June 23rd is Kentucky, New York, and Virginia. June 30th is Oklahoma and Colorado, the Senate race. And July 7th is the New Jersey primary. So we'll get to it. We'll get through those next week.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Howie Klein. Have a great week.
Good to hear from you, Nicole.
You too. Okay. Bye-bye. All right. And with that, we made it with only a minimum of problems. Tomorrow, Governor Don Siegelman will be here to talk about how he would advise the Democrats to go about winning this election. So I got my work cut out for me tonight. I know what I'll be working on. All right. Fixing these gremlins. Thank you for listening, everyone. Thanks for bearing with me. See you tomorrow.